You may be looking for brains, but you have found Nutty Bites.
Hello, mixed nuts and nutcases. Nuke Joss here for a Nutty Bite. That's right, the long overdue general show. I'm going to try and keep this short. That's my goal. My goal is to make these shows a little bit shorter. I think that the direction that the podcast is going is definitely more towards the debates. The debates seem to be the driving force behind the podcast. And I just want to make that the primary focus. I think that seems to be working. But I do want to make sure that I keep telling you all about what is awesome in the world. And so I'm going to continue to do that. Not only just through these general episodes, but also through the Facebook group. There's been a lot of conversation going on at the Facebook group. Every day I add a new topic and I ask your opinions. Generally, something geeky, something to talk about, or something internet-based. And I'm having a lot of fun with it. I hope you all are having fun with it. If you're not a member of the Facebook group, just go to Facebook and search for Mixed Nutcases. If you don't have Facebook, I'm sorry, but you can still interact, you know, on Google Plus with the Nimless Studios page and interact on Twitter and so forth, or you can call in or whatever. It's all good. Don't worry. You're not missing out by not being on the Facebook group. Well, you are, but it's not integral to the podcast. So please enjoy, have fun, get involved. One of the other things about the Facebook group is I generally post the topics of the Nutty Debate there before I host them, and I use that as a great place to try and find debaters. So if you'd like to be on a Nutty Debate, or if you have a topic that you'd like to hear about, come on over to the Facebook group. We'll talk about it. We'll add it to the doc. We'll try and schedule something in. As you all know, I try to make sure that my debaters have some form of authority on the question, or, you know, just being a geek makes you an authority, which is fun. All right.
I heard it on Twitter.
Uncle Monster tweets, "Don't listen to the imposters. I am the real Uncle Monster." And I believe that's in response to the intro that was recorded at Balticon, where everybody was claiming to be Uncle Monster as if he were Spartacus. There was lots of discussion about my reality-bending shoes on Twitter. At the Clock Doc says, "I don't hate them, I just question your need to break reality with that color choice." The Roundtable podcast, which is at Writers Podcast, tweets, "They are sassy and full of wind just like you, so I would expect nothing less. Just keep them away from water." Bzz. Spiritual Tramp tweets, "Canadian writers, assemble. I has a mission for you." And that's right. Scott Roche is putting together an anthology of short stories by Canadian writers to raise money for the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. So you can find more details about that by going to scottroche.com. That's Scott, R-O-C-H-E.com. VG Ford tweets about making her new author photo, a photo that I took of her and Rory, which is at Rory Says Roar the Dragon. At Jay Rambos tweets, "I'm wearing a bright red shirt today. I sure hope nothing..." Oh God, my legs, what happened to my... And then hilarity ensues as over Twitter, poor Ensign Ricky is trying to be brought back to sick bay, and sadly, sadly, it ends badly.
3,000 years ago, a god told a lie. Now, only a goddess can tell the truth. Persephone has everything a daughter of Zeus could want, except for freedom. She lives on the green earth with her mother, Demeter, growing up beneath the ever-watchful eyes of the gods and goddesses on Mount Olympus. But when Persephone meets the enigmatic Hades, she experiences something new. Choice. Zeus calls Hades Lord of the Dead as a joke. In truth, Hades is the goddess of the underworld and no friend of Zeus. She offers Persephone sanctuary in her land of the dead, so the young goddess may escape her Olympian destiny. But Persephone finds more than freedom in the underworld. She finds love and herself. The Dark Wife, winner of the 2012 Golden Crown Literary Award for Speculative Fiction, is now available as a free podcast. Listen online at muserising.com.
What I'm watching.
So, yeah, it's been a while since I've discussed things that I'm watching. Most recently, I just finished Life on Mars. I watched the U.S. version and the U.K. version, one off, watching each episode from either version till about somewhere in the middle of the season and or the first season of the U.S. version. And then I just stuck with the U.S. version because I felt like it had more heart and I cared more about the characters and I found the story a bit more compelling. I would highly recommend anyone to watch this. I know that the show got canceled, but luckily enough, they were able to wrap up the story. So it's 17 episodes. And the very last episode kind of blew my mind. I'm not going to lie. It blew my mind. It was very detailed. Every single episode that they aired, not one of them was a throwaway episode because something from every episode was present in that very last episode. So I highly recommend you watch it. It's very enjoyable. The story is interesting. The characters are compelling. What I liked most was every episode they were tackling a different trope of 70s cop shows. So it wasn't just that, you know, he starts out in 2008 and gets thrown into 1973, but of course they have the jumper from the roof. They've got the bombings. They've got the Irish gang. You know, they've got all of these different tropes that you're used to seeing in Starsky and Hutch and Kojak and other shows of the time period, and it's a very interesting twist on it. And like I said, the last episode pretty much blew my mind. It was really interesting, and I like what they did with it. I then went and watched the end of the UK version, and I liked their ending. It was really good. I think I probably would have liked it more had I seen that ending and then saw the U.S. version, because I think that the U.S. just knocked it out of the park. I mean, it was so much better. It was a great ending, very sincere, good emotions going on, but it didn't blow my mind. Nothing. There was nothing to blow my mind. It was very sentimental. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I'm watching more Being Human UK. I still haven't seen the US version. I don't think we have it on Netflix in Canada. But, you know, honestly, I like that story so much and I like the characters so much. I really don't see that I would like the US version. But again, you know, how can you tell until you actually do? Generally, the UK versions are better than their U.S. counterparts, but there are exceptions. Like, for instance, I do not like the U.K. version of The Office. I find that the joking is more mean and more bullying, whereas the U.S. version seems to have a little more heart. And I don't know if it's a cultural tone or what. I just know that it's different, and I prefer the U.S. version. But most other shows, when they try to make a U.S. version, it just fails so miserably. You know, I mean, the U.S. version of Ab Fab, I can't think of all the times that they've tried to do it. I know that they're essentially trying to make a U.S. version of Sherlock, but they didn't get permission from Moffat's crew, so they're calling it Elementary. And Watson's a woman, and I don't know. I'll watch it because I'm a huge Sherlock fan. I love anything having to do with Sherlock Holmes. So, of course, I will definitely give it a shot. But at the same time, I don't hold much hope for it. I don't know. Yeah. No. I watched a show called Bedlam, which I thought was kind of interesting. I don't know if there's more episodes coming. I don't know. I don't know if they got a second series or what. Essentially, the premise is that Bedlam, as many people know, is an old hospital, psychiatric hospital in England. And the premise is that the family of the last owner of the hospital got the property back and have turned it into luxury apartments. And one of the members of the family, who happens to be adopted, he sees ghosts. He sees ghosts. He relives their death scenes and so forth. And of course, his family assumes that he's mentally ill and that he's, you know, a bit schizophrenic. And this is what this is. He's hearing voices, not actual ghosts. So he spent a good time of his life in hospital, you know, because of that. And he's figured out how to get released. And it's essentially a show about ghosts. And it's interesting. They're a little... They stress a bit the whole, because he's adopted, he's not really part of the family. And that bothers me. That always bothers me when fiction, television shows, and so forth present adoptive families like that, because that is not the case. I mean, even if the adopted person feels that way to some degree, because there are many issues with being adopted that you have a lot of insecurities, as somebody who's has two adopted brothers, yet there's no difference, and I have never said he's not my real brother or he's not really my family. Like, no, that just doesn't happen, okay? You grew up with somebody, they're your sibling. And that just, it really irritates me. And I know I've ranted on this before when it comes to Dexter. I'm actually noticing as I go through the old episodes of Dexter that there's a lot more of the unrealistic emotions among adopted families in that show. It just bothers me. It really bothers me, because to me, it's experience. I don't care if somebody has my blood. I mean, I've got first cousins that I've never met, and they're not family to me. You know, they are not my family because I've never even met them. But there are people who I share no blood relations with, but I have known them since I was a child, and we grew up together. That's family, you know, that's, and then you have your whole chosen family, and I could digress about all of this, but it really, really bothers me when adoptive families are presented that way. So let that be a lesson to all of you television producers, movie producers, and fiction writers. Do not use adoption as a plot device like that. Do not say, well, they're family, but they're not really family. No, that doesn't work, because that's just going to get me mad. So I saw The Dark Knight Rises in theaters, and I think that may be the only thing that I've seen since Avengers. I'm not sure. But I liked it. I liked it a lot. Yeah, I've got some nitpicks and I've got some problems, the whole Batman God moding and everything. But I do like it. I thought it was, I actually think, looking back on it, I think it's a, well, there are some plot issues. I still think it's as good as The Dark Knight, if not better. Because it focuses on a part of Batman's history that I really like, his retirement, you know, him being broken. And I always like that in the comics. And I think that part of Bruce's life is fascinating, and it's something that should be explored more. Far too often when we see superhero films, we are seeing them about their origins. And I want to see more than their origins. Okay, everybody knows where Superman came from. Everybody knows, yeah, kryptonite, found on a farm, yeah. Can you show us something more? Do we have to see Peter Parker bitten by the spider in every single movie? No, you don't have to do the origin and then get to the continuation and do the story that you want to do in your third film. You can do it right away. Let's see. I want to see more superhero films about the middle of their careers, the ends of their careers, things like that. And I think that that's something that's been lacking. I think that there's a lot of hype over the Dark Knight movie because Heath Ledger died. Now, Heath Ledger did a fantastic job. He did. I will not knock him at all for that. I think that he did a great job as the Joker. But honestly, honestly, people, if he hadn't died, people wouldn't have been so into it and so clinging. I think that Batman Begins was a really great film, and I loved how Christian Bale did Batman. But then in Dark Knight, it kind of got comical because you could barely understand what he said because he Batman. I mean, come on, really? Like, really? I think Christian Bale's a great actor, but honestly, I think that him doing a trilogy, not the best idea. I don't think that he's a trilogy man. I think that he's good for getting a role down and then moving on, but he hasn't grown. I don't see anything new in the last two movies. I think his best performance was in Batman Begins. What makes The Dark Knight Rises so good is all the secondary characters. Anne Hathaway, I thought, did a really great Catwoman. You know, she's no Eartha Kitt, but she bears a striking resemblance to Julie Newmar, and I liked the way that she was presented. I enjoyed it. I liked it because she wasn't being a sex pot, which drives me absolutely up the wall when it comes to Catwoman, because there's subtlety to her character. She flirts with Batman, but that's not her being a skank, okay? and sadly, when we see Catwoman, and anyone that's seen that bad Halle Berry movie, you know, suddenly Catwoman dresses like a stripper and is all about, look, I have boobs, you should be attracted to me. No. So I thought that Anne Hathaway did a great job. I thought that Tom Hardy did a really good job as Bane, to tell you the truth. I mean, yeah, you can have nitpicks and story problems, but I think that he did a very good Bane. And often, it's the best screen representation of Bane, because often all we see of Bane is a big hulking guy somewhere in the corner that beats people up and acts like a thug. And honestly, Bane is better than that, and we know that he's better than that. Gary Oldman, of course, doing a fantastic Gordon. I mean, the man, it's just perfect. I mean, he nails it. Just nails it. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, I'm not going to spoil anything, I'm not going to say anything, but his character, I really enjoyed, and I really liked. I thought it added some depth to the film that, had his character not been there, the film would have suffered. It really would have, because honestly, The Dark Knight Rises is not so much about Batman, the person. It's about Batman and Gotham City. You know, it's about his relationship to the city. And you need Joseph Gordon-Levitt because he is a representation of Gotham City, of the people of Gotham. And, you know, when you've got heroes and villains and the commissioner, it's hard to see that everyday average person, the person who grew up in this world. And the other thing that I absolutely love, and I will give Chris Nolan a lot of credit for, is the fact that he said it, I think it was 8 years in the future. I may be wrong. You can all post the, well, actually, comments if you want. But it is set a bit in the future from The Dark Knight. Time has passed, and I like the fact that we get a bit of progression there, because a lot of times in movies, they just, it's one after the other, and it just feels like no time has passed, and suddenly, you know, it's like Batman becomes a fad, you know? Oh, nobody's ever heard of Batman in the first movie, but by the second movie, everybody knows his name. I'm buying Batman t-shirts. It's all awesome. And then the third movie comes around and it's like, yeah, he's only been here for 3 years. No. I like showing the progression of his life. And that was a lot of fun. And I think that's pretty much all that I saw other than the Olympics. Yeah, the Olympics I was watching pretty much 24/7. I mean, I went on a camping trip in the middle of it. And I mean, other than 1 or 2 days, I still found my way to a TV. The best thing was CTV, which had the Olympic broadcast, had an app. So you could go and watch stuff that you missed, like, for instance, if you were out camping or if they never broadcast it, like, oh, you know, there were no Canadians getting medals in this event, no Americans getting medals in this event. So we didn't show the heavyweight female weightlifting, but I could just watch the 2 hours straight that was all filmed of that because they're constantly filming, right? So even though there weren't commentators, I could scrub my way through and find the people that I was looking for, see how everyone did, watch the events that I was interested in. And I really enjoyed that. Unfortunately, I heard lots of bad things about the NBC coverage in the US. And I'm sorry for everyone that kind of got worked over by NBC. I'm sorry that you didn't get to see much of the games. I'm sorry that NBC didn't have a cool app. And I'm sorry that they decided to objectify the athletes. I'm sorry that they decided to cut out parts of the opening ceremonies and the closing ceremonies for political reasons. Or just because they didn't realize it was important. That's my favorite part. Granted, I will say that the CTV commentators, I mean, I swear, the people that they had talking, aside from, you know, generally you have one commentator who's a former Olympian in the actual event, but the people that were hosting it, you know, from the news desk, the way that they talked about the events, it's like they didn't even know what these events were, why they were important. It was a bit frustrating. Thankfully, in the closing ceremonies, they really didn't talk too much because I found it really obnoxious when they tried to describe something, but they didn't know what it was. I was like, could you at least have somebody that has some understanding of British culture here, please? I mean, this is ridiculous. But other than that, it was pretty good.
Any writer will tell you that a good workshop can make the difference between a good story and a great one. Wouldn't it be great if you could workshop your story with some of the rock stars of new media? I mean, people like Nathan Lowell and J. Daniel Sawyer and Chuck Wendig. That would be amazing. You know, that would make an outstanding podcast. Oh, wait. It already is. Introducing the Round Table Podcast, a weekly podcast where writers discuss their story ideas with some truly remarkable people. Weekly episodes start on Tuesday, March 6th, and will be available on iTunes and on the Roundtable Podcast website. Visit www.roundtablepodcast.com for more information. The Roundtable Podcast, literary alchemy, one podcast at a time.
What am I listening to? You don't know, you don't know, you don't know, you don't know what I'm listening to.
Okay, so a couple of new podcasts. I'm going to try and remember them all. I'm not sure I have them all. So if I missed your podcast, I do apologize. But I've been adding quite a few podcasts to my listening queue. Let's start with some of the intro casts. So there are two big ones that I want to talk about right now. One of them is the Dexter cast, which is run by Bob DeGrand and a couple of hosts that I'm not going to be able to remember all of their names. I'm sorry. But he's the oldie, and then there's some newbies on the show that have never seen Dexter, and they're going through it episode by episode doing reviews of the first season they've finished so far. I think they're just starting the second season. And it made me realize, by the way, the story arc for the first season of Dexter, I think, is the best story arc they have in the entire series of all the seasons. I think that the character interaction, character development, and the way that the actors portray the characters get better and better every year. But I really think that the story arc in the first season was just phenomenal and possibly one of the best. I mean, there are other storylines that are fantastic, and I don't want to dissuade anyone. I mean, there are some of them that you're just like, whoa, I can't believe they came out with that. But I just think that there's something really special about the first season. So that was really great to listen to. One of the things that I really love about this podcast is the chemistry between the hosts. It sounds as if there's no gaps, there's no dead air. It sounds like they're just bouncing off of each other. It's really great. The sound quality is pretty good on most of the hosts. Every now and then there's like one little thing. You know, it's Skype. This is what happens on Skype. But generally, the sound quality is really good. Like, all of the hosts seem to have pretty clear microphones, which is very nice. And like I said, their chemistry is really good. They bounce off of each other. The two of the hosts, the more that I listen to it, I can pick them apart now, but sometimes I can't remember who's talking and who's not, because their voices are very similar. But that's not really a problem, you know? And I really like it. But as it turns out, after talking to Bob, it turns out that no, there's dead air. It's just he does such a good editing job that you don't hear the dead air. You don't hear the long, drawn-out silences as they're waiting for someone else to speak. So kudos to you, Bob, on the editing, because I do not hear as if – it doesn't sound as if you're cutting things out. And so that's fantastic. Yeah. So the Dexter cast, look it up. It's, you know, search for it in iTunes, search for them on Facebook. They got a Facebook group. Very interesting. We're often throwing little bits here and there, like Dexter-inspired wallpaper or fingernail art. Yeah, that one was interesting. The next thing I'm going to talk about is the Red Dwarf podcast. Now, this one is, of course, focused on one of my favorite shows of all time, which is Red Dwarf. Red Dwarf has had 9 series so far, and it's a comedy first, a sci-fi second, but it generally takes the sci-fi tropes, makes fun of them, has a lot of fun with it. It's just hysterical. It's a lot of fun. I grew up watching it on PBS, and by the way, I just guested on their review of series 2, episode 2 of Red Dwarf. So that was a lot of fun. And I think that'll be good. I'll let y'all know when that comes out on the Facebook group and on all social media markets. But I had a lot of fun doing that. I think that the group that they have is really fun. They've got, Shane Poole, Heath and Amanda Fowler, I think their name is. I don't want to mispronounce anything. And then this guy, Paul, who hates Firefly and is scared of me because I'm going to bash him for hating Firefly. No, just kidding. Paul's not a fan of Firefly, so I gave him a rendition of "She Don't Like Firefly, So She's Gone." And it's a lot of fun. And I'm just playing Paul. But it's a good group of people. I like their chemistry. Again, it was slow to begin, but every episode the chemistry gets better and better. And the more that they review it, the better it seems to be. I think that they were expecting a lot more depth from the show in the earlier seasons. But they're definitely starting to get into it. It's a lot of fun. If you're a fan of Red Dwarf, you'll enjoy it. And if you're a fan of Red Dwarf, you really don't need to watch the episodes with them to enjoy the intro cast. Actually, my favorite intro casts are the ones that I don't really need to watch the episodes to kind of feel like I'm involved in the conversation as I'm listening. But that they generally inspire me to go back and watch the episodes that they've just reviewed and see the little things that they've picked out. Another intro cast that I was recently a guest on, it's called Still Flying. And that one's done by Tabs. And what she has is it's her and a newbie. And they review the episode, and then she records a separate episode where it's her and oldies, and they talk about the episode with the oldies, so there's spoilers in half of the episodes. They're all tagged, of course, for spoilers, but they also talk about the newbie's reactions and her predictions. So that's really interesting. I think she's going to have a lot of fun when she goes back and listens to everything that people said about her predictions and what's going on there. Yeah, it's a great podcast. And if you're a fan of Firefly, well, it's another thing for you to listen to. It's more about the joy and the love of the show and discovering the characters all over again. So it's a lot of fun. And that one, it doesn't come out as regularly, but I think because there's only, 14 episodes in a movie, they can be a little lax on their recording to kind of like make it last. And I think that that'll be really good. That'll be a lot of fun. So I'm enjoying that. Trying to think. Oh, Epic, which is a new podcast that I'm listening to. It happens to be recorded right here in Fredericton, New Brunswick. 13 episodes in. Basically, what they do is they pick a topic and they discuss it. Geeky things like bad characters or bad ideas and so forth. So, for instance, with bad characters or weak characters, rather, they talked about Wesley's role in Buffy the Vampire Slayer or Joxer the Mighty in Xena, different things like that. I enjoyed it. It's a little bit kind of like the debates that I do, only I don't know if I want to say like more structured, or rather people they come in with a plan rather than fly by the seat of your pants, and you have regular hosts, so you're getting the same ideas from the same people the opinions of the same people every week. So that's really interesting. And the other thing that they do that I am not successful at but would like to be able to do is they keep their shows to under a half hour. What it is they record the podcast and they also air it right here at CHSR FM in Fredericton. So it's going out over the airwaves as well. It's aired twice a week, and so they're fitting into a time slot. And that's great because it means that, you know, it's like 25-minute podcast. I mean, you can listen to that while you drive to the supermarket, you know. It's easy to fit into your schedule, and it's a lot of fun, and I'm having fun with that. I am scheduled actually to come record with them this week, so we'll see how that turns out. And hopefully we can get a promo and play that on here once it gets made. So that'll be a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I just discovered it because I met Mark, the host, at a radio station Mixer here in Fredericton, and you know, we got to talking, and it's like, oh, look at this. We do similar things. This is awesome. So he started listening to me. I started listening to him. And it turns out it's just all around good fun. So I really recommend that everyone try it. You know, check it out. Epic. It's awesome. And like I said, they're 13 episodes in. So there's a little bit of a back catalog you can listen to. They start out every episode with a little intro sketch that I find really interesting. I'm a fan of that. I'm not nearly as creative, but I am a fan of that. I have a bunch of stuff downloaded, but I haven't listened to yet. So, I mean, I'm slowly working my way through it. Generally, all the stuff I've talked about before, I'm continuing to listen to. Listening to all of the Volume 2 of Tales from the Archive. Very interesting things. I specifically really liked, there was one that Pip wrote about a camera that takes pictures of the future that I had a lot of fun with. I thought the Swan Princess one mashed up with the King and I was really interesting as well. You know. Oh, and then the J.R. Blackwell one was quite hysterical because you get a bit of T acting all flustered. So that was fun. But yeah, other than that, that's what I'm listening to. And, how could I forget? No, I don't know if I mentioned it in the last podcast or whatever, but Yeah, I've now listened to Ravenloft and Shaman Tales from Nathan Lowell. Yeah, fantastic. Absolutely great. I really, really liked Ravenloft. Sorry. I keep doing that. It's like, D&D. No, Ravenwood. I really enjoyed Ravenwood, which is the one where Nathan was challenged to write 150,000 words, I believe it was, for the month of November. He was challenged to write in a genre he hasn't written before, which is fantasy. It's very light fantasy, by the way. Challenged to write from the point of view of a woman. And I think there might have been a fourth challenge. I don't remember what it was. But it turned out great. And I'm sorry, I kind of hate you, Nathan, because how can you switch to things that are so uncomfortable and still write them so well? Because obviously you've got down like the premenopausal female state of mind really well. Kind of hate you. Got to stop knocking into the microphone. So yeah, awesome. Way to go, jerk. Too talented. I listened to Shaman Tales also, which I enjoyed quite a bit. I really did. I think if it were the first thing of Nathan's that I listened to, I wouldn't enjoy it. I'd say, oh, okay, this guy's okay. But because it's supplemental to the Cher series and I've listened to other things he's written, I really enjoyed it. But I think if you were to pick one of Nathan's books to start with, I would start with either the Cher series or Ravenwood. Both of them are fantastic. And Ravenwood, the sequel, is coming out. So yay! That's awesome. Might be interesting to actually listen along as it's produced. I don't know. I don't know if I can do that. I really enjoy just powering through. So we'll see how that works out. But no, those are definitely awesome, awesome patio books. I highly recommend you go take a listen to those because I liked them. Plus there's something about Nathan's voice. I just really like his voice. And the way that he tells a story, it's interesting because he says nothing ever happens in his books. And essentially his books are about problem solving. And you're presented with a situation and you need to come up with a way to solve your problem and to think creatively. And I love it. I don't know. There's something about it. And getting the community involved. I really enjoy that. Oh, I've also been listening to How to Succeed in Evil. I listened to the first prequely, you know, short series that Patrick McLean did back on the Shaunakee. I've talked about that in the past. I'm listening to the full book now. I like it. I like it a lot. I feel like I like the first version that he did better. I just feel like there was more energy in it, but I am enjoying this book as well. And I don't know if I had only listened to this, if my reaction would be a little bit different. I don't know. We'll see. But it's a lot of fun. It's great. Oh, Podcasting Under the Kilt. That's another one. There's a brand new podcast series out called Podcasting Under the Kilt. It's done by Scott Roche, and essentially he's getting people who are involved in podcasting to talk about podcasting. But the thing that I love is he's not going to the usual suspects. I mean, we've all heard interviews from the same people. You know, I mean, from since podcasting became big back in 2005, 2006 to now, there is that core group of people that are constantly being interviewed. And, you know, you've heard them interviewed before. You know what they're going to say. What he does is he grabs different podcasters. He talks about different ways of podcasting. Every episode is focused on something different. And the interesting thing that I like is that they're not all the same kind of podcast. You know, generally he'll have about three podcasters depending on the topic. The first episode, I believe he had James Durham, Mick Bourdais, Kim the Comic Book Goddess. I feel like there was somebody else. I don't know. But, you know, he talked to them about podcasting, the process and so forth and how to get into it. It was very enlightening and I highly recommend listening to it. It's just a good mix. It's a fun listen. And if you are a fan of podcasts, take a listen. Play? I should make like, I should get like dice and roll it or something for this. I'm going to need new bumpers for this segment. What I'm playing? Yeah, that's right. I am playing board games and role-playing games and all sorts of things. I'm constantly playing games and I'm having a lot of fun with them. And you know what? They are awesome. And there's a couple board games that I want to talk about that are so awesome. And I've kind of recently gotten into it. One of them is Small World. Yes, we've all heard about Small World, right? I mean, Tabletop covered it. Next thing you know, stores can't keep it in stock. Now, I don't watch Tabletop, but I have a lot of friends that do. And then they pick their favorites and then they bring it to game night and then I get to try them. So I'm getting like the creme de la creme, you know? And so they brought Small World and I had so much fun playing it. I played it a couple of times, and then Tech bought me Small World for our anniversary. Talk about a geek gift. That's awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, that night we actually played it with his parents, which was kind of interesting. And that's the thing. You can play Small World with 7-year-olds. You can play them with, you know, your parents. You can play them with pretty much anybody. It's a board game, right? And as you go, you figure stuff out. There is also an iPad app. I think it's on the iPhone 2, possibly. I don't know. Anyway, it's an iOS app, and you can play the game, and you can play with 2 players. You can actually play with a lot more players with the actual board game, but with the app, you can only play with 2 players, or you can play against the computer. And we got it on sale, so it's just been, you know, super awesome. And I think I got it for $4 or something, so I ended up buying all the expansions that were available, which were like 99 cents, I think. Something really cheap. I mean, everything was on sale. Like this one weekend, I got a bunch of iPad apps. They were on sale and it was awesome. One of them, by the way, not a game, but it's a program called Art Rage. And it really gives you the ability to paint digitally. And you get the depth and the texture of paint. And it's got watercolors and oil and chalk and all sorts of things that, you know, Sketch Club Pro and the other ones, they were just lacking. I'm having a lot of fun with that. It's a bit buggy in the sense that it uses a lot of memory and it will crash. So you have to keep saving and you don't really want to run any other apps on your iPad at the same time. And even though the other programs are a lot more stable, I'm a lot happier with the art that I'm getting from Art Rage. So I'm willing to stick it out. You know, I'm willing to save. Although I did have one day where I did save and I saved and I saved and I saved and I still lost 2 hours of work and I was not so happy. But you know what? That's okay. Moving on. But yeah, so Small World, it's a great app. You can get expansions in the app and, you know, Tech and I, we like to play it before bed sometimes. It's a lot of fun. You get to essentially attack each other. So that's fun. And I highly enjoy it. Another game that I want to talk about is Zombies with 3 exclamation points. Giganter had us, we went over to his place when we were visiting in Ontario. And we played that and had a lot of fun with it. It, as he describes it, it is a game for if you don't like your friends, because you could lose friends in playing this game, because essentially your goal is to mess up your friends, to send zombies after your friends, to trip your friends so that you can get away from the zombies. You start with just 1 square of the city and just a couple of zombies and your tokens. And every person that plays adds another square to the city, adds more zombies. You're able to move, but essentially your goal is to either get to the helipad and free of zombies, or to have killed 25 zombies without dying yourself. Or I just accumulating 25 zombies. Every time you die, you have to give up half of your zombie kills. So yeah, it could run all night. I mean, we played all night and we finally said, okay, that's it. We're doing 2 more rounds and then we're going home because we've just been playing this too long. And then somehow we wrapped it up in like the last round. It was kind of fun, but I had a lot of fun with it. I have no problems, you know, screwing up my friends. And, you know, as long as everybody knows it's not personal, then it's fun. Another game that I think might have been mentioned on Tabletop again, that my gaming group brought out was Fiasco. And I had so much fun with that. It's not a European board game in the style of Zombies or Small World or whatever. But what it is it's actually like a role-playing game. There are dice. But there is no rolling, you know? You simply pick a genre, pick various story elements and settings, play out different scenarios, and then the people in the group can decide if it goes well for you or if it goes bad for you. And essentially, you're telling a story. By the end of the game, you end up with a very funny and interesting story that, in the times that I've played it, every time we've said, you know what? I'd like to see that movie. The first one, we were casting it, you know, big budget. We had Sean Bean as the dead guy. You know, we had all sorts of things. And then the next one that we played, we said, okay, this is like a cheap YouTube production. So like we even figured out the production values of the stories we were coming out with. But it's so much fun. You can be horribly inappropriate. You can just be crass or whatever. But the thing is, it's called Fiasco, so nothing goes well for anyone. There's no real winning in this game. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. I highly recommend it. It's great for one night of gaming, and you get that real role-playing essence. You know, you feel like you're role-playing. And it doesn't matter about roles. Like, that's one of my big problems. I'm a role player. I love role playing. I love tabletop. But one of my problems is I'm a berserker barbarian with a strength of, you know, 32 or something ungodly. I roll, but I can't knock down the door because I rolled poorly. But that halfling with no strength was able to knock down the door. Why? Because he rolled well. I mean, it's just, no. I like playing to the character. And what Fiasco has you do is you're playing to the character's flaws or poor luck or so forth. It's a lot of fun. So, yeah. Those games are pretty awesome. There's some other games that I've played over the last year, but I don't know if I've mentioned it, you know, Arkham Horror, Settlers of Catan, you know, different things like that. I really enjoy it. I haven't really gotten back into our steampunk tabletop game for a while just because of scheduling and so forth. And also because when we get together, we get more than just our group. And so we want to play board games, and board games are a great way to get together. And it's less commitment. You don't feel bad if, well, I can make it this Saturday, but I can't make it next Saturday. So how's that going to screw up the game, you know? And yeah, I really like the fact that tabletop is pushing this style of gaming into the world. And I think it's really good. When we were in Tech's hometown, there's a game and hobby shop that basically said that he is having the best year he's had in the last 10 years, but that the last 4 years have been getting increasingly better, but that this year is like blowing them all out of the water. And every time tabletop features something, he can't keep the game on the shelves. And it's very good for his business, which is great because we need more stores like that. We need to keep the comic book stores going. We need to keep the game stores going. And, you know, with this kind of mentality, like I remember years ago when the Wii came out and parents were starting to game with their kids. They were starting to play video games with their kids, and Rock Band were bringing people to play video games together. So it wasn't just somebody in their basement playing PlayStation. It became a group activity, and it still is. I think that by pushing these board games, because so many of them, you can play with younger people. You don't have to only play with adults. Because of that, we're able to bring more groups of people together. It's a very social aspect, so it pulls us geeks out of the darkness and make us intermingle, which is wonderful, which is great. We love it, right? And people with kids, they can bring their kids into it. People, if you're a geek and you don't really have many geeky friends, you can bring non-geeks into these board games and they'll enjoy it. We've got a friend that comes over. They come over to play Settlers with us, which is a really good game for about four people. And he is a super huge Star Trek nerd, just like Tech and I. But his fiance, she's very mainstream, you know? She's really, she get her eyes glaze over sometimes in the middle of our conversations because she has no idea what we're talking. She's like, that's Star Trek? Star Wars? I can't tell the difference, you know? But she loves Settlers of Catan. Like, she is a Settlers nerd. And she, you know, you can bring people who aren't really into that sort of thing and bring them in through the board games. And, you know, it's a gateway drug, you know, kind of like Game of Thrones is a gateway to get normal people to read fantasy. Well, this is a gateway to get normal people to play games with us. And yeah, I highly support it.
Most of what I'm about to show you has not been made public.
So how about Fringe?
What is that all about?
It was really obvious this episode.
What?
Compared to the other episodes, it was obvious.
Olivia Dunham, FBI.
She's stupid.
That's my theory.
It's a good one.
Strange things happening.
Things like...
There's a frog attack.
I'm sorry, my ears are tiny.
Don't whip me again.
Observer Cast.
They're really well informed.
Yes.
It's the only podcast that you can find in this particular brand of insanity.
So much happened here. So much is about to.
I've been trained for a lot. Hostage crises, chemical attacks. What I've been seeing recently, I'm scared.
You can find us by searching for us on iTunes, or you can go to our website, observercast.blogspot.com.
I just want to go back to the forum.
I don't think you can.
All right, so I think that's about it. I don't have any feedback with me. I don't think I got any phone calls or emails or anything that I wanted to mention. It's been a while. I do apologize if you sent feedback and I haven't read it on the air. Please send it again. It's not because I'm rude or anything. It's just because I'm disorganized and because I decided, dude, it's really hot. Although today it's really nice, but it's been really, really hot. And, you know, with the windows open on all the noise and everything, it's been difficult for me to record in my house. I've recorded some debates, but it's tricky. I've been recording a lot of conversations lately, like I'm guesting on other people's podcasts. But, you know, it's tricky to keep the noise down in the summer, what with everybody needing, you know, a fan or an air conditioner on, and then you have to turn it off for the recording and you're just sweating and it's gross and not awesome at all. But then there's the whole, you know, kids out on the street and my neighbor's dogs who, as soon as anybody walks by, starts barking, and then they get the other neighbor's dogs barking and it becomes like a chorus of barking for a while. And it's just absolutely crazy. So anyway, because of all of that, I'm actually recording this in the CHSR FM radio booth. So I'm not even using my own equipment. I don't have all my notes. I don't have all my clips. Like, usually I have a little folder on my computer where I put all the voicemails and things that I want to do. Normally I'm typing up the show notes as I'm recording. I'm not doing that. I'm just kind of like doing it off the fly here. And so, yeah, so I'm at the radio station recording this, and there you go. And I'll edit it at home. That's why I don't have full feedback. But please, if you have feedback, if you've got something geeky you really want to share, if you have any comments about any of the debates, I know that there's been a lot of discussion about the lame superheroes, superpowers, sorry, which I'm not going into because it's weird. You know, somebody will leave a comment on a post. Generally, they leave comments on Facebook or Google+. People don't really comment on the website that much. But they'll leave a comment on Facebook or Google+, and then somebody responds to it, and then somebody responds to it, and then somebody responds to it. It becomes a whole conversation. And it's hard to read a conversation on the air, so yeah. It's hard for me to decide what to pull for feedback and whatnot. Anyway, you don't need to hear me complain. I hate it when people talk about the process because honestly, that's not why you're tuning in. But if you would like to leave feedback, please call 347 Nutty 42, that is a New York number, or send in a voicemail or an email to nuttybites@nimlas.org, or leave a comment on the website, nimlas.org/blog, or leave a comment on Nimlas Studios on Google+. Or you can go to the Facebook group, which is Mixed Nutcases on Facebook. Now, here's the deal. There's not a page. It's a group. Why? Because pages, stuff gets lost, you know? It's harder to interact. A group, you can really interact. So this is a group. You asked to join. I approve you right away. And come on in. There's about 50 of us chatting in there, I think, now. Come on in. Every day I've got something new that I want to talk about. I'll give you little challenge questions. We'll discuss things. And like I said, you can talk about future debates. You can get yourself signed up for a debate and find out what else is going on. I don't know when I'm going to get time to edit this. So if this comes out before September 2nd, please find your way to dragoncant.com and look up the panel that I will be doing. I will be hosting a live nutty debate in a Google Hangout for DragonCant, which is the virtual con, the alternative to DragonCon for those of us that can't make it to Atlanta. That's right, all the con with none of the crud. So come on down and I'll be hosting a live nutty debate. After me, Tech will be hosting a discussion about physics and our friend Newton, Newton's three laws and why it matters to science fiction writing. And then I'll be hosting an art workshop of how to visually represent your audio project. And if we have time, we'll go into, ebooks and prose as well. But that's right. Come on down. Enjoy Dragon Cant. I'm looking forward to it. If this airs after September 2nd, was that a lot of fun? Oh, that was so much fun. I'm sorry for everybody that missed it, but really, Dragon Cant was so much fun. And it just, you should have been there. You really should have been there. Oh, well, there's always next year. All right. Talk to y'all later.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios. You can find us at nimlas.org/blog. Contact feedback at nuttybites@nimlas.org. Call our voicemail line at 347-NUTTY-42 or 347-688-8942. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. Basically, you can share it, you can send it around to your friends, just don't change it, don't sell it, don't try to make any money off of it, and link back to me, my site, and everything.
Oh, I knocked into the microphone. A cultural tone. I think it's very interesting. I think... Sorry, I'm trying not to say interesting all the time. Apparently, that's a drinking game. I think that it's... I think that's a facet that is... God, I can't even... And the best thing was... keep knocking into the microphone. It's interesting. What else? Is there anything else I'm listening to? I listened to Shaman Tales also, which I thought was really interesting, very fascinating. Just, blah, 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 blah. It was very interesting.